All right, where we left off was talking about these DR remotes, and now we're going to move to TCP/IP control. This was that AMX Crestron world, touchscreens. This is a short and sweet one. So you have third-party Ethernet control port on the back. The Ethernet port on the back supports this AMX Crestron. There's a protocol that uses ASCII text over TCP/IP, which is sort of just like bitbang and really simple text over an Ethernet network. And the key to this feature, if you're into this world, is you don't need the hardware to test and write your AMX Crestron code. If you're into that world, a lot of people go, no way. And what that really gets down to is, if you're the contractor buying the products, you don't need to physically buy this product 3 or 4 weeks before the job goes in from an installation point of view, because they can use just the software to test everything about how it works. Because the same server that runs in the hardware Linux computer is the same server that runs on the Ethernet port on your computer. So you can, that's subtle, but for people that understand that, that's pretty fast, good stuff. So that means from a cash flow point of view, I'm trying to get my mic just right, from a cash flow point of view, they don't have to buy the box a month ahead of time and pay for it, even though the job site doesn't go in for 6 weeks or what have you, and they don't get paid for a while. Web controls, this is probably the most interesting part of it, and we sell more boxes because of this feature, so let's look at what this means. On the Ethernet port, there's a web server in there. And so it's probably best shown through example. Let's go back to the software, and I'm going to open an example file. Take a second. Open up this example file, some demo file, not save what I had, and open up a file. And so what this does is it lets me draw a custom web page inside the box, and it runs in a server on that Ethernet port in our box. And so here's a file I use as my example file, and we'll look at this in a little more detail in a little bit. But one of the things I can do is go over here to this processing where the audio flow is. So I already created an audio flow in this example file. So here's some background music channels. You can see here's my solo tuba background music channel, my solo channel. You know the idea. Gamelan, anybody played a Gamelan band before? Gamelan? No Gamelan fans? All right, just making sure. So let's say I had a zone out here and I'm doing a hotel. And off to the right here I have a spa zone. So if you're doing a hotel and they have a spa where you can go get a massage, boy, I wish this thing would stick to my ear better. That's all right. Let's say I wanted the volume control in this spa. If I open up this thing called a zone processor, it has inside of it a little ducker. And so if you page into the spa, you know, somebody's left their car lights on or something, they can do that. You can turn the volume up and down in the spa. So if I can open up this level control, let's say I want this level control controlled from a web page. Or I can also link it to the knob on the wall, so that's one way I can do it. But let's do that. And let's say the selector, same thing. I want the selector on a web page because the people in the spa want to take the phone out of their pocket and they want to control the volume in here because they don't want to pay the money to buy a cable and terminate it and put one of these out there. So let's do that. So here's how that would be done. I can go to the control systems little button up here, and I can hit Control Page Designer. And in the control page designer in here, I don't know if you noticed, but this touchscreen I was playing with earlier, someone asked how do you program that, and the same software we're about to look at is how you program this little touchscreen. So the file I brought open is the one that's in the how box already. So the same programming steps are done. So there's already some stuff in here. But I'm going to create a brand new web page up here under this web page designer. Hit the plus pages sign, and hit the spa, and let's call it spa.html. So that's what it really is going to do. It literally creates a spa.html file in the Ethernet port. And then I can put the controls on there. There's a control tab here, and I can add a new level control for the spa, and I could name that spa if I really wanted to, spa level or volume. I can put that out on the audio flow, or put that out here in the control screen. And I need a selector in here, too, so let's hit the little plus sign for the selector. So there's a selector for the spa select. And put that out here. And all I need to do is tell this web page how to link to this particular level control here. So here's the level control I want to link to. See how the level controls have this little chain symbol or a little paperclip? I can grab that for the spa level control, and I can link that to the audio flow object. In other words, I'm binding the concept of the slider on this web page to the audio level in the audio flow. And now I've linked those together, and they turn purple. And you can see I can even check that that's working by turning the volume up and down. Everything looks good. So there's a level. Let's do the selector. Here's the selector. Notice that the selector has the names of all the background music channels in here. You got the jazz and the rock and all this stuff, but there's no names yet on the selector. So I can grab the chain symbol for this guy, and I can link that to this chain symbol over here. You can see it's sort of hiding back here. I can drop it there. lets me do that. If I click OK, I can name that if I wanted to. But notice now the names show up. So that's how I would create the web page. And now I can see that that's going to follow it. Because if I go over here and grab this selector and move it around, I want techno, gothic, folk, mariachi. So you can see they follow each other. So I can taste that that works. I can also then do a couple things. I can open up an actual web page. I can click this preview page button, and it opens up my default web browser on my computer up here. And here's my, this happens to be Firefox. And so now I can change the selection, and you can see it changes the selection. I can go back here and see the selection changes. Let's change it to Rumba. And then I can Alt-Tab back, and it's still Rumba here. I can turn the volume control up and down so it's following. And then another thing I can do, it's not uncommon for us in a hotel or a school or almost anywhere you want a church, they have somebody that wants to control the audio. And so one of the things the software will let you do is I can go up here and generate a QR code. And so there's a QR code I've opened, and I can take my phone, and I can grab my little QR code scanner on my phone, and I can walk over to this QR code on the phone. Except it's not fully loaded yet. Stand by. Come on. There we go. Yeah, it's working now. And I can take the little QR code scanner on my phone, and I can scan this QR code, and it says, hey, I know you can't see this, but I can open up that URL, and now my phone's on the same network as the Ethernet port, and now I can turn the volume up and down from my phone, and I can scroll over here and turn the, move the selector around.
Is that cool or what?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. Yeah. Cool. So it's a really nice way to get people, like, anybody work for a church where they have, like, a volunteer staff at a church? Have you ever heard of such a thing? So the staff changes often, and therefore you might need a new phone on there. So why have to type in the whole URL when a QR code could be, printed out and put it? We do this in hotels, Marriotts and stuff. They put a podium together and they put a QR code underneath it. And when the guy that rented the room pays the right fee, it's the key to this feature, by the way, pays the right fee, the guy can now take the phone out of his pocket. He can get on the Wi-Fi. He got the password from the front desk and paid his fee. And now he can get in there and adjust the audio system from his phone. So that's the idea of this concept of web control page. There's even log in and log out, like we talked a little bit earlier, this concept of logging in. So you can have multiple of these. We have the bartender can have his login, and the manager can have theirs, and hotel staff or whatever, that idea. So that's the idea of web pages. So you can see then you can create web pages. They're all completely customizable. It's all browser-based, so it's not app-based. How many people have products that have an app? You've got to go to the iTunes store or the Samsung store, get the app. How many times have you had to deal with the concept, oh, my phone got OS updated, but now the app's not working? Has that ever happened?
Exactly.
Yeah, we just don't want to avoid the app world like a plague, because that didn't make any sense for what we're trying to do. So that's why you can run any of these software web pages in anybody's Windows or Apple PC or a Surface or anybody's tablet of any kind. Anybody smart? How many people have a smartphone with a browser? Every single person in here? There you go. So it's pretty straightforward. So that's the idea. And you can, as you saw, I could test everything about the web page. Let me back up one. So here's some examples just to start thinking about how you use it. Here's the hotel. This is the Orlando Hilton at Universal Studios. And they have the Pacifica ballrooms, right? They have the walls that open and close between the meeting rooms. So they have little push buttons here. When they open the wall, they go push the button on their phone or their tablet. In this case, it's a Microsoft gave them the Surfaces, so there you go. And then you can go navigate between other rooms, so if you want to go change the volumes in these rooms, this is the page that, this is the button that you would go to the another page that shows you the volume for everything in this room. And there's a whole other page for what do you hear in here, background music or just the room or both or what have you. So there's one idea. And most popular sort of fits in the school world, right? Because in a school, they don't know what a console is, so you give them the 6 or 12 volume controls they want or mute controls. If you do a little church, here's the 4 wireless mics they need on bingo night and for the wedding, and the mute control. And that's plenty for the volunteer staff that are going to be overloaded if you give them a 5th volume control. So that's the idea with web pages. So it's that idea.
Steve?
Yeah.
Could those pages change according to the application? So there's a page for bingo night, a page for the rave.
You can. You can do this in a couple ways. You could log in as the staff, and if you're the manager, you could get to every page, bingo night, everything. But you could have the bingo only login page, the bingo only login number. So all you would get is the bingo page. Right. Or if you're the manager, you can have buttons across the bottom or the top that say, here's the page for bingo, here's the page for church, here's the page for, spaghetti dinner night, here's the rave night, here's the, all that stuff.
Does the thing have a clock in it?
There is a real-time clock concept. It's called the event timer in here that you can set up. On Sunday, 10:15, do this. Yeah. At 8 a.m., do this.
And on Sunday, bring up the Sunday page.
It won't. You can't do it. You'd have to physically go to something and push a button to get the page to come up in the first place. So it won't load a page with time, but you can recall presets and settings with time, certainly.
And are they completely different? Can they be completely different DSP layouts? So Bingo Night, you can have a limiter on it where...
Okay. Let's talk about that a little bit. That's a deep question. So one way to think about that is here's the audio flow. You can't use a preset and erase these things and have more wires show up with a preset. But you totally could bypass the limiter in this preset and turn it on in this other preset. So the audio flow wiring and the blocks on the screen you can't change on the fly. That's all have to be sort of fixed and in there all the time. But you can certainly bypass stuff or route around things and do all that kind of stuff totally.
Well, it's Linux could have a cron app maybe.
Except you're such a nerd that we don't give you access to the Linux kernel in here, right? We're smarter than that, I think. Because we know you, Bob. We're very familiar with your way of thinking.
Well, you can't SSH into it then.
You cannot. Well, I can because I know how.
Ah, so you but can. I mean, you can. Right?
That's how we do a lot of stuff with, like, logging. And if, you know, a customer has trouble with the product, we can... There's some little apps that will grab stuff out of the box and tell us the Linux settings and what happened across time and, you know, all that stuff. All right. Back on target here. So let's look at these RAD gadgets that we make. We make some audio expansion gadgets called RADs. And these are two-channel in and out. So they plug into the blue ports on the back. And so a couple ways to think of it. Here's the whole family of RADs. We make 20-some models. Some of these XLR jacks are microphone level in. Some are line level in. There's XLR out. Some of these RCAs are stereo, and some of them get monoed right away. You know, just analog mono and send it to the A-to-D converter. So let's look at a few of these. You can see it's kind of hard to see on this projector, but some of these are two gang decor wide, and some are three, and some are four, and some are one even. So there's RAD idea. So let's talk about how this works. The same stuff we talked about earlier before the break apply. These converters on the wall, we automatically send firmware to them. All their settings are automatically sent to them. The hot swapping applies. You can put them on a portable card. It's extremely common for people to put one of these two products on the AV card. How many people were the AV nerd in school? Bob, you had to have been the AV nerd in school.
No, I left it for Rick.
Okay, there you go. So you put this on the physical, you know, projector cart, and you plug it into the wall. In fact, didn't you do a school like this in Tacoma?
I was busy mixing sound.
Yeah. You did a school, or was it a school, or was it a museum? There was something in Tacoma. Was that your job or somebody else? I'm confusing somebody else's job.
We didn't do one in Tacoma, but where was that? That was a long time ago, one of the early
ones?
Early ones.
Okay, so it wasn't your design then. Someone did, I thought it was a museum in Tacoma where they put this on that little portable cart and they have several places where they can plug them in. And so they put it in this room and they plug it in. So very portable cart friendly. We've talked about this already. Let's keep moving. So they're location aware. Here's the 500 feet. So these are audio devices, and they won't go 1,000 feet. So this is, we'll see what's in the cable here next. So 500 feet is how far these A to D converter gadgets can be. And the key is we can test that the audio is going, and we'll get back to this get on the plane indicator at the end. So here's what's in this RAD cable. So before the break, Dan was asking this question, how can you go farther than Ethernet? Well, part one is it's not Ethernet. And part two is here's what's in the cable. There's 485 port. There's the 485 port data. Here's the 24 volts and ground going down one twist. And then these two twists here are AES3 digital audio. Remember AES-EBU as two-channel digital audio? Been around since 1983. So it's not old technology. Been around forever. 24-bit 48 kilohertz, which is where we can get our 104, 103 dB dynamic range. So works just great. And there's a shield around it. You need a shield solely for the FCC guys, because this is a low data rate. It's only 6 megabits per second. It's not very fast. That means it's immune to things that are problems with Ethernet. Ethernet, for example, is how many people have bent the cable of Ethernet a little bit too much and it stopped working? Anybody see this? It's not uncommon. We've had a whole meeting, what was that, last year, year before? Two years ago, where that's what we did. We hooked up Ethernet audio gadgets. We abused the cable as much as we could to see if we can break it. This is much less, you know, a problem with such a low data rate in this RAD.
2 hours of that are on the internet on my YouTube channel.
Great,
actually at our meeting summary page.
Yeah.
Running over it.
Yeah, we did all kinds of nasties. And I was the meanest, and I started, like, cutting his cable up. Most expensive. So I still owe you at least a dinner or a new cable, because I felt bad about that. Note that I was working with Bob Moses, the executive director of the AAS, and we were over there trying to abuse it, and we said, let's just cut it up. So I feel I had a partner in crime in AAS. So there you go.
He bought me dinner.
There you go. Okay. I paid for your cable. All right. So here's a couple ways to think of how these RAD devices work. First off, obviously, you want to think of this port as an audio in and out port, but you can physically put the converter on the wall 500 feet away. We thought it was a good idea. I mean, almost every competitor, no one makes such a thing. They make Ethernet devices that do this, but an Ethernet device is double or triple the expense of this. And 300 feet, and you need power over Ethernet, and it doesn't have all these lights and stuff. You can't find this light on a power over Ethernet audio gadget kind of idea. So that's what we're after. So that's one way to think of it: AD or DNA converter at the wall, 500 feet away, or this little box. This is a plenum rated gadget. Plenum rated means I can put it in the ceiling. So you put it up above the ceiling and hang a microphone out of the wall. You can put it underneath a meeting table. You can put this thing in the back of a rack somewhere, and so. If you put it in the back of the rack, that's just another couple audio channels in and out of your box, in and out of your sound system. So it's just another good way to think of audio in and out with this thing called a RAD-16. So that's what that is. I've got one up here. So that's what this guy is. So think of it as just another way to get two channels of audio in or out without having to buy a whole other rack gadget and a power supply and an AC thing to plug it into. And then the consultants will have to figure out how much more HVAC do they need in the room to cool the room down because you've got this power supply sitting there, you know, with a switching power supply, et cetera. So that's a couple ways to think of RADs. Backing back up to that same slide. Here's another sort of almost a sidebar. There's a couple of products we make called an AM1 and AM2, and I brought one with us. Let's talk about this one, because this is also a RAD device, but it's really after two major application problems. The easiest one to get your head around is, how many people went to their high school gym basketball games and they have an announcer's table? Announcer's table, you got your announcers, a wireless mic or two. The cheerleaders these days show up with their cell phone because they want to play their Lady Gaga song at halftime and dance to it. So they plug that into the back, and they forgot to charge it, so there's a charge port on the back. So that's how it works, is it not? You get the idea. You got a main output here. It's mono device, so main out can go mic or line level, so you plug that right into the snake. There's also a USB sound card on this thing, so that way you can plug a laptop into it, and this shows up as a two-channel sound card, and you can play back the presentation audio into this box, and then you can record all the audio in this thing back to the same computer, which you're going to want to do, because half the time they have a projector or video in the high school gym, etc. And then the key to the product is there's only one knob per channel. So the elementary school, you know, teacher who's trying to run the, you know, announcer's table won't get confused. They won't know what a monitor is and then the aux value.
That's what you think.
Huh?
That's what you think.
Yeah, exactly. Get the idea. It's a gain-sharing automatic mixer. So it uses that Dan Dugan algorithm from the 70s, that speech algorithm, if you're familiar with these automatic mic mixer algorithms. So it uses that because we also then said, well, what if you need more than four mics? And so we make another box, the one I have up here, the AM2, and you can plug in another eight mics, and you plug the Cascade thing in here, and now this is a 12-channel automatic mic mixer. And a good way to think of this gain-sharing algorithm, how it works, is if you picture everybody that's in front of a microphone as if they're in a balloon that you blew up with air, and everybody's inside the balloon, that means the loudest talker pushes the most air against the balloon, and that part of the balloon grows, right? And that's what this algorithm does. The loudest talker gets more gain, and the balloon shrinks where people aren't talking. Yet, the key to this from an acoustics point of view is the gain in the system never changes because you tied the balloon closed, so the amount of air cannot change in the sound system, right? So this is the brilliance of this old patent. So the loudest talker wins, just like you've always done. How many people go to a meeting and the loudest talker always wins, right? That's how it works. So that's a great algorithm when you're just trying to set up the mics and go and people aren't acousticians and they don't know what gain is. So you can't change the gain in the sound system once you set these knobs up. So there's the key to the gain sharing idea. And then finally, the major thing we were really after, and there's a patent on this concept, you can go read patents. Philosophically, we publish all these things on our website as Rain Notes, or you can go read the patent on this concept, which we're going to next, which is we weren't really after the gym announcer's table. We were really after doing a hotel meeting room where they got four XLRs in the room normally, but they set up a head table discussion, right? 12 doctors show up, and they're all up front, and you set a microphone in front of all those guys. And somebody needs to do that. How many people have done this? How many rent stuff? Have you done gigs like this in your days? And so how they do that now, even to this day, is they have a guy. They rent a guy, and they rent a console, and they rent some mic snake, and they set the guy up in the back of the room, and they set that guy up, and that's great. Great way to do it. But there's lots of places where you just want to have a guy that's not the audio guy. He's kind of the janitor or somebody that works in the IT department these days. And you want him to walk in with this mic mixer, and what you can do with this product here, the AM2 on the bottom, is while the meeting is happening and they're using the wireless mic in this room and the wired mics in the room, the guy can walk up and put this on the floor and set up his 8 microphones. And then he can run a single Cat5 cable, this cable right here, and he can put that into this little gadget I'm going to pass around. It's called a RAD-X. And so RAD-X is this thing up here on the screen, center left. And a RAD-X solves this problem that it's a Cat5 cable, and someone's going to say, hey, this is Ethernet. Let me find the Ethernet network, which, of course, this is not Ethernet, as we've just been talking about. So that we solved that with this Ethercon thing, and it's an Ethercon RJ45 jack. So we sell this for a dealer cost like $30 or something. So we'll pass that around. And if you're familiar with RJ45s and Ethercon connectors, which is a Neutra German product, I can zoom in a little bit, see what it looks like. It literally has an RJ45 in it, but it looks like an XLR shell around it. And when you specify this system, what you do is the portable card or this mixer would have a Cat5 hanging off, and it looks like an XLR on the end, even though it's an RJ45 jack. So you can't physically plug that into an Ethernet network. It won't work. And you can even put on it audio cable, or you can color code it. So I've had guys color code them. So you can plug that into the wall, and you plug it in there, and you can even put on that, as you'll see, there's a little label at the top, that little gray rectangle at the top. You can put AV card right in there and slide it in there. It's a little Lexan window to slide the name in there. So that's how it solves the problem of it's not Ethernet, but it's a Cat5 cable. It's a nice way to make these things portable and move them around the building.
Make it idiot-proof.
Yeah. Now, the key to the discussion, however, is the next thing, which is where the patent comes in, is if you do indeed plug this AM2 into the back of the HAL port through one of these RAD-X gadgets or right in the back of the HAL, what it can do is it will auto-mic gain-share auto-mix between this physical mixer and the HAL box that is in the rack, which is the take-home. This is the home run part of it. Is no one makes a product that does this. You got wireless mics in the room, and you walk in with a portable mixer, and you need the wireless mics and the wired mics and the jacks in the wall and the portable mixer to all be in the same gain-share, and that's exactly what this does. So if you're an acoustician guy, that's like a pretty slick thing because no one really does that. So that's what we're really after.
So does it control the individual input gains, or is it just like cascading auto mixers?
Okay. Go read the patent, and it will answer that question. But basically what it does, it's architecturally, if you look at the circuit design, block diagram would be a better way to think of it. There really is only one audio channel going up the cable.
Yeah.
But the key to the patent is the concept of how you pull off the gain share across physical devices without any control mechanism. If you go look at patents on automatic mic mixing, Shure has the most of them, like 59, because I've read them. 59 patents on auto mixer. Historically, they use gates with lots of products have gates in them. Gate, turn the microphone off and mute it when no one's talking at that mic. And this concept, there's no gate concept in this game sharing world. It's a better way to think of it is we talk about this balloon, and the balloon shrinks. But the most it ever turns any one mic down is like 20, 25 dB, which means to turn it back on is fast. And there's no click because there is no concept of gating off or on. And we've done systems. We did one in Oregon that has 175 microphones. And so backing up a page, how they pulled that off is this cascade concept. You can cascade 8 of these products together. And you can get 64 microphones through 8 of these AM2s, and they can plug that one cable into this blue port back here, and there's your first 64 microphones. You plug another 8 in, cascade those together, you plug it into the second port, and you got another 64 microphones or 128 microphones done in two cables. So pretty useful way to do it. So these guys had there was a big university, like a surgical university. They had 150 students in this room and 150 students in this room, and it's a ballroom combined, so they have a wall that opens and closes between, and every other student has a microphone. So there's a mic between every other chair, and there's a little push-to-talk button on the mic. And so they take the 75 mics in this room of 150 and another 75 in this room, and they can put their 150 microphones in four blue jacks on the back of the box, and it's a nice way to do it. In this case, they're not getting fancy. They don't do what they call room zoning, meaning there's no real voice lift. The guy in the back right corner doesn't need to be reinforced through a speaker in the front right corner because they were rich enough to have good acoustics, right? They had padded carpet and padded chairs and good, you know, room treatments and this kind of stuff. And if you're a cheap company or you don't have enough money to pull that off, that's when you have to do these mixed minus room zone systems and it gets nasty. And you're trying to solve acoustic problems with electronics, which is never really a good idea unless you have a lot of money.
On this balloon gain algorithm, do you have control over the attack and decay?
There is no attack and decay. How do you talk about that one? That's a great question. There is no adjustable attack or decay, and this is one of the beauties of how this circuit works. If you read the original patent, it does a really good job of sort of talking about what you're sort of getting at, how quickly it can respond. And like we said, if it's only turning it down 20, 25 dB, you don't have an 80 dB of gain change to do, because if you're trying to do that in the presence of audio, that's going to click every time. Which is why Shure has 59 patents on how to do NOM, number of mics, number of open mics. So, because then they have all kinds of ways they throw more technology at trying to make sure that gate doesn't click. And turning the number of mics, doubling the number of mics, turns the gain down a little bit. And so then it gets, you know, that's one of the brilliance of the Dan Dugan algorithm from the 70s.
Dan Dugan.
Yeah, Dan Dugan. He's still around. He's still at trade shows. If you've ever watched any basketball games in the past 40 years, basketball, doesn't matter, sports, anything, news, anything, that's the algorithm you're listening to. Which is why there's a color commentator in sports, right? Because if you ever listen, those guys never shut up. Why do they never shut up? Because the way this algorithm works is if no one shuts up, all the mics get the same amount of gain, and the noise, you can hear the noise a little bit. Mm-hmm. The noise goes up. That's why a color commentator is constantly talking on a sports broadcast.
There's ways around.
Now, granted, Dan Dugan has many more cool patents on solving that particular problem that we just don't even go after. Not our world, right? So that's an AM1 and an AM2. Pretty interesting little gadgets. Let's do a couple more rats and try to wrap up a few more last things. Here's a USB sound card rat. So I don't know if you know Rain, we make a bunch of DJ products with USB sound cards, up to 22 audio channels in the, you know, DJ world. But this is just a two-channel sound card, a little rad gadget, and so this thing has all the same lights that all the rads have on it. If you looked up here at the break, we have the four lights here are the four twists. So someone was asking, we're checking the cable, and we indeed have a light for every cable. Here's the light that turns on for when the power twist is good. And on the RJ45, if the count twist is good, this light turns on. And if the audio TX is good, that's where that light turns on. And if the audio RX, audio AES3 is going, that's good. So AES3, remember AES3 has a lock signal concept, if you read the patent or the standard. That's the AES3 lock signal. That's all it is. And so that's very useful stuff. So there's where the lights we're going to show you. And these same lights show up on the back of the box. And the goal there is we want the install monkeys, the termination monkeys we call them. No one's an installer in here, right? Good. The termination monkeys, they need a light because they're not going to have a computer because they don't equip the termination monkeys within the computer. So they have a light right on the back that tells you if the cable's good, and that's good. So this is something you don't get with Ethernet. Right? So there's the idea. Also, all these rads have a signal and overload light right here. That's useful when Pastor Joe calls on a Monday and says, man, yesterday in church I had the trouble with this microphone. So now the contractor on the phone can say, well, you know, Pastor Joe, can you hop into the mic and go follow the mic cable to where it's plugged in? Is the power light on? Oh, yeah, the power light's on. You got four green lights. When are you talking to the mic? Does the signal light turn on? How many people, when they put an XLR jacks in a wall, put a signal light next to it? Anybody's ever done that? No. How hard is that to do? I mean, it's that near impossible. Not going to ever happen. So that's why we sort of think rads are an interesting idea because they solve a lot of different problems that you just can't solve with Ethernet, which is a trendy kind of thing to do cool products these days, but didn't make any sense for what we're trying to do. Last thing on here, there's a blue light on here that's very, really powerful. This is an interesting story. So we've done some of the Microsoft meeting rooms here in Redmond, and they're using this in there because they have the person at the podium, here's the next screen, person at the podium wants their audio presentation to be heard in the room. And so, historically, that's how you do this, with the little jack on the far right here with the red line through. So, backing up, what you can do with this blue light is, when the operating system of the computer you plug into this thing recognizes this as the sound card, and suddenly it's permission to show, you know, how that works in Microsoft, you know, Windows, you plug it in, the little thing pops up. I found a new device, and it, you know, installs the driver, and eventually it goes ding or whatever, and now you can select that. And that's the same exact thing happens with this. When that thing is recognized, that blue light turns on, and you can get really fancy because the control system can automatically detect that that computer plugged in, and it can turn the projector on and lower the screen and have the light, so you don't even have to go push a button to know that the sound system's turned on and somebody plugged in the presentation. So, of course, we did some Microsoft. We've only done, you know, four or five of their little bigger rooms over there. And I met with their AV guy, and what they want to do with it is pretty left field. Very interesting stuff. They want the Outlook calendar, which is a weird one, but stick with me. They want the Outlook calendar that they use to reserve this room for a meeting to recall the right preset in this box so that when the Outlook team shows up to do a software meeting at 10 o'clock, they can set up the sound system for the people that show up in that room. And then when the people that write the Xbox software show up and there's 200 people in the room, they want to recall a different preset in our box through this USB cable. So they want to recognize whose computer got plugged in. Which is pretty out there. And they think it'll take them quite a while to get there, but very interesting, kind of very interesting application, isn't it? Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, they're geeky.
Yeah, they're very geeky, but totally doable because we can do this in our software, and our DJ products already have this technology, HID commands it's called. So it's, you know, pretty nice stuff. So that's stuff you just can't do with an analog gadget like this. It's just not possible. Make a couple more little gadgets. We make a little pager gadget. So if you're trying to select what zone or zones you want to page into, so you can page the all, you know, page all zones. So this little LCD screen shows up, and you can select the tables zones or the dining zone. So you can have several of these around a building. We do some race tracks, for example, in Australia, and they have 12 jacks around the room, around the track. You know, some in the center where the pits are and some in the restaurants, and they can plug them in where they need them and select what things they want to page into in different rooms, move the pager gadgets around. And then we also make a RAD17 mic. This is an ambient noise sensing kind of gadget you could use. I think Mark's doing this in the train station. Was this your spec? Yeah. Ambient noise compensation, that's the thing we talked about earlier, one of the first things we talked about, ambient noise compensation, listening for how noisy it is in this room and turning the, you know, page up and down like that. So I'll use my favorite Henry Ford joke. This thing comes in any color you like as long as it's black. But you can also spray paint it, so there you go. All right, so that's what RADs do. Kind of an interesting little thing. They do a lot of things that you just can't solve all the ways. And then we make these expander rack gadgets. Let's go through this relatively quickly because I want to show you the get on the plane indicator. So here's the expansion bus idea of how you get lots of audio channels. So Dan, earlier you were asking about this 528 channels in and out. That's what this red expansion bus does. Probably hard to read, but here's the HAL1X DSP box, the only one with this expansion box capability. So you can daisy chain from one to the next to the next to the next, and you can put 32 of these boxes together total. So that's where you run out. You just can't plug in the 33rd box. Actually, you could plug in the 33rd box, it just won't do anything. And then you can put them in any combination. So of the five boxes we make, you can put in any combination of the 32. And these cables can be long. So the red cables can all be 320-something feet long. And it's Ethernet Layer 1, but not Ethernet Layer 2, which means conceptually that it uses the physical chips that we buy to make Ethernet, but it doesn't use any of the protocol details of how Ethernet really works, which means I can put this on a gigabit media converter, an Ethernet fiber optic converter. It converts it from a Cat5 cable to a fiber optic cable, and that way this fiber optic cable can be, you know, from 1.2 miles for one kind of fiber, or this can be 7.5 miles. So what this is really about is we wanted the ability to spread these audio I/O things between equipment closets in a building. And so you can do that over copper if it's 327 feet is what you have, or if you need to go farther than that, you just use a media converter. And that just converts it from Cat5 to fiber. Yes?
So these gizmos are taking 500 channels times 2 back and forth, but it's limited to 300 feet. The other things are taking 2 channels times 2, 1,000 feet.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yep, you got it. Thanks. You got it. So that's what the expansion gadget bus is like. So just reviewing these distances, like Dan was just saying, if you want these expander gadgets, the red bus, that's 327 feet, technically. The RADs are 500 feet for audio, and those controller remotes with knobs are 1,000 feet. And real is what we're really after with this expansion bus of our own. And if you're in this industry, the BSS Blue Link is a product from BSS. They're conceptually, they have the same exact kind of idea. I think it's 128 channels or 250, four, 56 or something. But conceptually, what we're really after is, you know, we've been doing CobraNet products for many years. And CobraNet now is sort of being supplanted with Adante technology, which we'll get to here in a minute. But we get this phone call, still to this day, I have a CobraNet system that's been working great for 8, 12 years, and boy, you know, today everything stopped working. And come to find out, once you dig a little farther, why CobraNet stopped working is somebody bought a new Ethernet switch and put it into the network, the IT guy, and everything stopped working. Mark is laughing because he's had this exact problem, I'm sure, many times. So that's what we said. Well, let's avoid that completely and have our own dedicated cable between every box of ours and don't use an Ethernet anything. In fact, it doesn't even work with Ethernet because we wanted the ability to have this cable be Cat5 friendly, easy to crimp, really inexpensive cable, but dedicated to the audio guy, and the IT guy has nothing to do with it. Not that we're anti-IT, we love the IT guys, and we'll get to the Dante box that we'll do that, of course, if you need. So that's what we're really after with this idea of using our own expansion bus of 528 channels up and down the cable, so you can go between different rooms. All right, so same idea here, slide we've seen before, where for these expansion rack gadgets, they automatically get new firmware sent to them. The firmware doesn't take 12 or 15 seconds, it takes like 45 seconds. So that means when you grab any of these expander boxes and plug it into any HAL, it takes 45 seconds to get new firmware and turn on, not 15. But that's sure faster than having to do it manually one at a time. So you get the idea. You can hot swap them, you daisy chain them up to 32 expanders, 325 feet, like we said. You get link indicators. And here's the latency question we talked about earlier. Dan was asking, what's the latency through this expansion bus? So if you go from the main HAL DSP box through 32 devices, the audio exits the 30-second device in only 22 microseconds, which is just stupid fast. I mean, who cares? Move on. So that's the idea with 22 microseconds. So here's these five expanders, and then we want to look at the get on the plane indicator and call it a night. So here's the expander for more rads. If you need more than the four rads on the back of this gadget, you buy one of these or six or seven of these things, and you get yourself 48 or 50 of these rads or audio DR remote control gadgets, and you spread them around the building and you go to town. There's an audio output gadget. So this is the thing you would buy and take your line level outputs balanced here and you plug them into the power amplifiers, and you got eight channels of audio coming out of the system there. And there's even a couple of rad ports on here and some controller remotes. So it's really a 4-in, 12-out DSP box. And it actually does have DSP in it. So unlike the previous one, which is just a rad audio I/O thing, this has actually fixed DSP in it that you just get for every single output. So you get DSP, you know, compression and EQ and a little zone mute control and a zone processor with 32 channels of background music and paging and this kind of thing. I have a cough. Hold on a second. Thank you. Then we have a box that expands inputs. So you got mic or line or line plus inputs. Line plus is this concept. This is an interesting little input circuitry for analog audio design engineers. I know there's several in here, Don. So this mic line input is mic input, a dynamic microphone, no phantom power, or 48 volt. It's line level, you know, plus 4 dBU kind of level. Or this line plus will let you take and mono two RCAs together. So you take the tip of the left channel of the RCA and plug into the plus. You take the tip of the right channel of the RCA and put in the minus. You take the two shields of the RCA and put on the shield, and you hit the line plus button, and it monos that for you. So it's a built-in stereo to mono converter. Pretty useful. So this box will accept 24 audio channels and give you 12 channels of mono. And this also has DSP on the input side, so compression and EQ if you need that. We also make an acoustic echo canister. We briefly talked about this earlier, the concept of trying to take the audio that comes from a far end out of a loudspeaker and avoid it going into the microphone and back to them again. So that's used in conference rooms. We've done like A&W headquarters up in Vancouver and various kind of applications like that. So this is a drag and drop echo canister in the sense that it doesn't matter where your microphone is physically in the system, you can get it to an echo canister. So here's their microphones. They can plug it in a variety of ways to our rad gadgets or the rack boxes or the HAL box itself. And then in the audio flow, you can just grab this echo canister block and put it in here. So several products in the industry do this, pretty useful. And a good way to think of it is we've done some hotels, Radisson kind of a hotel, where they have 37 meeting rooms. And the original consultant spec was every XLR jack in the whole building wants an acoustic echo canister on it. which is stupid expensive if you start looking into this. So what they did instead these days, it lets you specify maybe 12 or 16 or 24 channels of acoustic echo cancer. And today you want to use them all 24 of those echo cancers in this meeting room, the big room. And then tomorrow you can recall a preset and reroute the audio and the audio flow. And you can use 8 channels over in this room and another couple channels down in this room. And so you can redistribute your echo canceling around the building conceptually. So that's
what happens if you try to get feedback, turn the gain up?
Boy, that's a loaded question. I'm not sure exactly what you're asking about.
Oh, turn the gain up, and you would normally get feedback.
You normally would?
I just wonder what would happen to you.
Yeah, that's a good topic to bring over up, you know, a drink later. It's going to be deep. That's a deep one. Because there's a feedback suppressor, which is DSP block in here we looked at earlier.
Oh, you have that too.
Yeah, that's also in here. This is a different concept. It's an acoustic echo. It's essentially, it's calculating the direct sound from a loudspeaker into a mic and all its reflections and doing an FFT of that and inverting it so that the microphone doesn't really have anything audio coming out of it, even though there's really audio hitting the microphone capsule. That's what it's doing. All right, and then last thing, we have a Dante box. So Dante is a Ethernet technology out of Australia. Their U.S. office is down here in Portland. And so there's hundreds of, you know, Dante boxes from all kinds of, you know, application spaces. And our box does the following. It's got 32 audio channels on and off of an Ethernet network. We'll see a picture of this in a second. And it can run at 48 kilohertz or 96 kilohertz, and we'll see how that works in a second. So that lets us get up to 16 of these expanders can be put on our little HAL box. So you can get a 512 by 512 channel Dante network with multiple of these hooked to our HAL box. So here's how this is really typically used. Go on one more slide here. So let's, you know, you picture a church and they got a console in the back of the church. So here's your front of house console in the middle of the screen. Now this is a complicated little graphic, but here's your, you know, balcony and your under balcony loudspeakers and your over balcony. And here's your stage up top. And you got some Dante microphones. Shure makes some nice little Dante wireless gadgets that put the audio from the microphones on a Dante network. And then they can send that audio to the front of house mixer. They maybe have stage amps that have this Dante port on it. Or maybe the broadcast booth has Dante. Maybe there's this thing called Dante Virtual Sound Card, which is an application you can get for $29 from the Audinate website. Which, check this one out. This is a great one. So touring band comes through town, and the drummer has his Mac computer over here, and I talked to this guy, and so he's got his computer next to the drummer, and he uses it to play back audio, but he's got this Dante Virtual Sound Card, which is a 64-channel, can be a 64-channel in-and-out sound card on the Ethernet port on your computer. So it turns your Ethernet port in your computer, this virtual sound card, turns the Ethernet port on your computer into a 64-channel in-and-out audio card, which means what this guy does is the whole band has, you know, a 48-track recording that is on this guy's PC, and he plugs the Ethernet cable on his PC next to the drummer, right here, sitting drums. He sends that over the Ethernet network to the front-of-house console, and the front-of-house console can mix that background 48 tracks over an Ethernet network and mix that on his Dante console in the front-of-house. Pretty out there, right?
Yeah, 1 gig or 10 gig? What's the speed?
The speed? Depends what Ethernet. In this case, you have to have a gigabit Ethernet.
That's what I meant.
For that many channels, yeah, typically. So, pretty interesting stuff, right? I mean, that's pretty out there. I wouldn't even imagine that you could do that. Totally doable. So, where our product fits into that world is, we would sit here in the equipment room with our HAL DSP box, and we would get the audio. Maybe that's just a sub-mix of what's heard in the, you know, venue, the stereo left, right, or something. We send that over the network, and our HAL box gets that, and it sends it to the lobby. And it sends it to the, you know, bathrooms and the classrooms over here, and so we're the distribution part of that. The HAL box would sit in that, and that's one way to use it. Another way to view it, if you're a block diagram kind of person, here's the same exact picture, just in a different way. So you have your purple Dante network over here, and here's your Dante wireless mics and your Dante console, and you're sending lots of audio channels, as many as you'd like, because all you need is more Ethernet network, which is cheap and easy these days. And you get lots of audio channels, and you send some of those audios to our little gadget, and then our red expansion bus here talks to the HAL. So we do the distribution on the left side of this drawing, and the Dante network I/O is all happening through the software that you can get from Audinate. It's called Dante Controller. It's the thing that you set up all the audio receive and transmit audio channels in Dante Ethernet network. So that's what Dante is. There are several other ways we've been using this. we're doing some jobs where they have a HAL in multiple buildings. They got five different buildings, and the HAL is doing the five different buildings, but they need a lots of audio channels between each building. So we're doing this job in Dubai with five different sort of campus-y buildings, and one of the buildings is the auditorium, and they want the recording studio, which is a different building, and they send it over the fiber optic cable, and they want all 200 channels that are in the auditorium sent to over the fiber optic network to a second building, and they get all 200 channels. So they have several of these EXP boxes of ours, put them all in the network, send hundreds of channels between buildings. Just gets crazy. Lots going on there. You can do echo canceling. So you're getting the flavor of the idea. So that's the expander boxes that we make. And I want to do one last thing and call it a day. Sound fine? Everyone tired yet? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So first thing I want to do is connect live to this box in here and show you the get on the plane indicator, and we'll call it done. So let's connect live. It takes 30 seconds or so here. I'll take a more tequila swig. We're going to talk to our live box here and show you the get on the plane indicator. So here's this hardware tab we looked at earlier. Didn't really explain it much. So here's what's going on under the hood. So there's a HAL1 product. This is the HAL1 and the HAL1 page with its, you know, rad ports. And I can tell the HAL box that a rad27 is expected in this port number one. And I do that by clicking this little white arrow. You saw me do this a little bit earlier a different way by dragging it. But here's the different pictures of the RADs and which model is going to be plugged into what port, etc. So it's expecting a RAD27 in port 1, and a RAD16Z here in port 2, and a RAD9 in this port, etc. So I've already told the HAL what to expect, but it's got all these yellow flags showing, device missing. So what's interesting about device missing, it says here, device mismatch RAD2 detected. So what do you think this means?
Wrong one plugged into the wrong one.
Yeah, has that ever happened to anybody?
Never.
No. Never plugged it in the wrong place? Wouldn't it be cool if your DSP box would just show you that it's plugged in the wrong place? I mean, how much time would this have saved you on a job site if you do this kind of thing? It could take you days to find this kind of stuff. You have these complicated, if you ever look in the back of a equipment rack, how many cables are coming out of the ceiling? I mean, it's insane. So
yeah, this stuff's on five floors.
Yeah, on five floors, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are called billable hours.
They are. That's totally true. So, a concept we didn't talk about with these RADs is this is a data cable, which means you don't have to put it in a metal conduit piece of pipe. Pretty useful. Except if you're the guy that sells the conduit. I've been in meetings where I'm pitching the product to people, and people stand up like, no way, I can't use that product. And you know how much money I make on conduit? Because, it's brother-in-law, the, city council member who approved the funds. You know how that works.
Yeah.
Somebody's going to be making good money. So that's, a hurdle for this kind of technology. So you get the idea. So let's keep going. So let's say I wanted to fix this. There's a couple ways you could do it, right? One thing you could do is go to the back of the rack. But if you study how these systems go together from a workflow point of view, the back of the rack is all dressed and clean, and they've made it all look nice if you're a good contractor.
You don't want to mess it up.
You don't want to mess it up. And it might take you a half hour to mess the thing up. So
fix it
and solve. It says here, RAD2 is in port 1. Where's the RAD2 really supposed to be? Port 4. So there are three ports apart from each other. But Murphy will guarantee they're really more like three or four rack spaces apart. So it's going to take you an hour to swap those two cables, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it?
Do it in software.
Wouldn't it be pretty useful to do that in software? So I can grab down here, it says down here, the RAD27 is in port number 4. So why don't I just grab the RAD2 and drag it to where the 27 is. And now, before I drop it, I want to make sure you can see the flashing lights. RAD2 and a 27, so let's see if you guys can be installers, ready? RAD2 to RAD27, drop it.
And there you go.
Would that be pretty useful to have this kind of... Oh, this one didn't turn on. Oh, because I'm not holding up the right thing.
You can fix that.
I should be picking up the RAD27 on the screen. You get the idea. So, what this gets down to is the concept of, I correct all these things. Notice it's working on this expansion bus idea, too. The expansion bus says, I'm detecting an EXP1, not the right thing. So even the red expansion bus will show you this stuff. And I can fix that stuff. I can grab this EXP1 and swap it with this one. And now it'll fix that thing, too. Another one that'll get your head a little sideways is, notice what I just really did is I physically changed a whole bunch of audio channel things all over the place, yet your audio flow has not changed, has it? So under the hood, what we just did, by taking a whole rack gadget and all the I.O. that has to deal with that, then we didn't have to change the audio flow at all, which you would normally have to do if you're...
But so, it happened.
Yeah, pretty interesting. So what this gets down to is this thing up here I call the get on the plane indicator. This guy right here, yellow exclamation. One or more ports have a mismatch between the configured and detected models, which is extremely useful to know, and will show you that you screwed things up, and it's easy to fix it, and you can save a lot of time in trying to understand how that works. So here's what this really means, kind of final slide of the night. What this really means is when this get on the plane indicator turns green over here on the left, it means all seven of the following things. Number one, it means that every device that you designed 9 months ago in this software really is physically present in this building and is really connected right now. Be useful to know this. Wouldn't it be nice to know if you walk into your recording studio what's really plugged in everywhere? Two, it means that everything is in the proper location in the building. How many people done installs where they ran a cable to the wrong room and they plugged into the wrong place? Does that ever happen? You think that installers get that right, especially if they're the low bidder trunk slammer guy? Yeah, exactly. So that's pretty useful. Number three, all the cables are pulled through the building because if you swapped two, we'll show it to you, which is pretty useful. All the cable crimps on all RJ45s are correct, and when they're not, there's a light that the termination monkey can understand. Number five, all control communications and audio to every room in the entire building are already working before you even walked around with a microphone and plugged in anything. Which means you're not going to be, as a contractor, have to walk around and go, yeah, Jim, you're in the equipment room, yeah, I'm going to go to, you know, I'm in room 17, I'm in jack number 4, can you find that on the blueprint and see where that's supposed to be plugged into the rack room? I mean, you're going to do that anyway because you have to do that for the gain structure. But that's a pretty useful thing to know, that audio in every room in the entire building is already working and I haven't even plugged anything in yet. Useful stuff. Last couple things, the settings for every remote in here is set up. So a subtle thing we missed earlier, I didn't talk a lot about. Remember I linked these chain symbols together and the names of all the selectors showed up? That means that the concept in the software of linking the chain symbols together means that the names on every remote have to be correct and they can't be wrong. How many people have done, you know, remote control systems of some kind where the remote on the wall has the wrong name on it and it's confusing or doesn't work correctly? That concept can't happen here, right? Not subtle. And the last one is a pretty big deal. The proper version of firmware is already loaded and working in your entire system because that's just how the box works. That logo is all about that concept. You plug it in, it sends it firmware and settings, and it turns on and works, which is how analog audio worked. And so that was really the architectural, you know, driver behind everything we've just talked about, is we wanted it to work like analog. You plug it in and it turns on and works. And not this plug in and it turns on and works if they haven't blocked the Ethernet ports you need to talk Ethernet audio, and they haven't, you know, changed the firmware in your Ethernet gadget. And so that's sort of the philosophy of how this all fit into the world, where the HAL term came from. So that is everything.
Very cool. Very cool.
Still make all this stuff up the road. Give us a ring. Come to the factory for a tour. Marston's coming up tomorrow. We're going to spend the day. Yeah, Dan.
One thing you haven't talked about at all is what kind of money this kind of deal involves.
Oh, boy, that's a loaded question.
I'm guessing the church has a much smaller budget than Microsoft or some hotel or something. So
it's kind of like everything. Can you buy a really inexpensive car and a really expensive car? Same kind of thing. So what kind of numbers can I give you? So I'm not the sales guy. I'm just the engineer guy. So what do these things cost? So
yeah, what's the retail cost for one of those boxes?
A retail cost. So the stack of these things, for example, this HAL main biggest one we make is, you know, it's like a $3,600, $3,800, you know, retail price. So contractors get it for $2-something, kind of.
That's the 512x512.
Yeah, that's the one with the.
Okay. And how about the 2x2?
The 2x2, that's down in like more like the $800, you know, $900 retail kind of numbers. I should have brought the retail pricing with me, but.
It's okay.
Do you have a price list on your website?
The price list is not on our website. You need to talk to a dealer. So there's, you know, this pricing gets complicated quick. So no one ever pays retail. So this is not like a consumer-y, you know, channel.
A lot of times they do that for
reference. We'll give you the retail price. I can send you that around, or you call me or email me, and I'll send you a retail price list of what this stuff costs from a retail. But no one ever really pays that.
Yeah. No. Is a minimal system two boxes connected by a cable?
No, a minimal system is, I mean, this two-channel box is all might be all you need, right?
Okay.
We talk about that home and away side at a high school football game. It would be simple, yeah.
What's your most complicated or the biggest system you've installed?
The biggest system we've done, we did 7 of the 8 venues at the Pan Am Games in Toronto this past summer. So the Pan Am Games and the Olympics are big, and then the Paralympics, and then the Pan Am Games are big. So there's a soccer stadium, a football stadium, a gymnastics-y thing, there's a pool, there's a velodrome for bicycle racing. We did all of those venues. There's several. If you watch the Pan Am Games in this past July, so we've been working on those for 2.5 years. The consultant called like 3 years ago, and I've known this guy for years out of Toronto. And so those are the biggest ones we've done. We've done a bunch of. I'm working on a very interesting one in Africa right now. It's the Northwest University in Africa, South Africa, and they're doing these 10 classrooms, and so they have 10 HAL boxes. And each of these classrooms has several of these USB audio things. And the way what they're doing is they've got the multiple PCs in this room, and each room can go send their audio to a distance learning classroom over a satellite internet connection. And all they have out in the middle of nowhere, farmland, Nigeria or wherever, is they got a laptop and they're teaching people farming. And so the audio comes in over the internet to the PC, and that so they have 57 of these rad USB audio gadgets because they got 2 computers in every room, and there's a monitor guy that has the ability to route anything to anything, and it's a pretty complicated system. I've been doing we do a lot of WebEx training with contractors who are trying to design systems and understand how to do the software, so that's a pretty interesting system. So. That page we had early on has a bunch of big systems in it too. So they vary very widely. We'll do just the literally 2-channel system. Some people just buy this box because all they want to do is take the phone out of their pocket and turn the volume up and down. So that's why we'll sell this low end box.
So at the Pan Am Games, they had video broadcasting that I watched. Would your audio have been involved in the video?
You bet. Yeah. So these rads, for example. Classic story that I'm sure a lot of these installs work this way. They have these rads all around the pool. I saw them on some of the broadcasts because the broadcast people plug into these things. And when they first designed the building, it's the pool, of course, and so there's water everywhere. And with big projects like that, they, of course, put these in a waterproof box. But, of course, they didn't put it in the waterproof box at first. They put it in the waterproof box like 5 months after the pool was full of water, which meant that we got one of these backs that was completely rusted out because it was so close to the pool that it was getting splashed on all the time because they didn't put the box around it first. They put the box around it last. So those are fun little projects like that. So that's what we've been doing. Thanks for your time and attention. Any questions, let me know. You can email me, steve@rain.com. Come up on their website and call us. We're just right up the street. If you're in Mukilteo, we'll give you a tour of the factory, how we make all this stuff and solder it and test it and show you around. Thank you.